The audacity of this pitch.
The audacity of this pitch has been brought to you by Diversify IT.
On the podcast, we've talked a lot about music as a form of expression, but also as a form, as you've referenced, of, you know, advocacy and activism. You know, is that something that's always been a through line of your career, or have you found yourself becoming more or less active, you know, in this season of your artistry?
Well, I think, you know, when you think about the breadth of the term activism. Mm-hmm. Frankly, you know, in some ways, when I was 19 years old at UNC in the BSM Gospel Choir, in some ways that was activism because we were active as a group and active as individuals. This was during a time when, and I'll just have to say this, I was telling one of my younger colleagues, you know, don't y'all look at me sideways when I don't get all excited about the DEI stuff. Mm. I was on a Black faculty caucus in 1982 at UNC. Mm. The work still needs to be done. We got to dig in and do it. It's as important and complex as ever. Mm-hmm. So the activism happens, yes, through the music, overtly and covertly, and sometimes intentional and sometimes unintentional.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you say that, because I mean, one thing that I was, you know, halfway alluding to was, you know, your connection with gospel music, spirituals and whatnot, and how they were early forms of activism in relaying directions for the Underground Railroad and helping slaves communicate with another, with one another, you know, in the fields. And so I was wondering how much of that you reflect on, you know, as you are choosing what to perform, choosing, you know, you know, the messages that you relay.
A lot, because if I have done 6 recordings now, and nearly every one of them has at least one spiritual on it. When people ask me what I do, I typically say traditional and original African American music. And traditional meaning it's spirituals, jazz, blues, soul, and now, you know, some of my own music. But nearly all of the sets that I do will either have a spiritual on it, or it will hint at, or, you know, a quote them in some kind of way, because that's just the origins of who I am and what I do. And the depth and power of it is just, you know, it's just not something that's ever going to go away for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Chris, do you have a, did you?
No, you're continuing to crush it. I think the one thing that made me think about is that a definition of activism, because I'm sorry to keep dwelling on Bernice Johnson Reagan, but knowing she was part of the SNCC Freedom Singers and had some very, you know, political messages in her songs, that's not what inspired me with her, and it's not what made me want to better understand African American culture. It was the spirituals and knowing the deep history of those songs, and her power. It's like just the, I've talked about this and, you know, some of the same stuff. I'm going to have to go to one of your shows, because it's, we've talked a little bit more about artists that are taking a risk by singing, you know, politically controversial songs. And, you know, those don't seem to be as effective as they may have been, you know, in the 60s or so is a far more powerful form of activism, you know, being true to your culture and representing it in a way as meaningfully as you are and others. So.
You know, and there's so many artists. I think of someone who has the longevity and presence of Mavis Staples. One of her, you know, I've loved everything she's done. And a few years ago she did, it wasn't called Songs of the Civil Rights Movement, but just a few weeks ago I was asked to sing at an event here in Durham at the for the History Museum. And they were commemorating Soul City, you know, things from Soul City. And the song that I did for that one was one that Mavis Staples on her eyes on the prize. Mm-hmm. You know, Paul and Silas down in jail had no money to pay their bail. Mm-hmm. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on. You know, and so those songs are timeless. But to your point, I think maybe some of the activism songs aren't as provocative now because right now, frankly, everything goes. Yeah. Anything goes.
Right.
You know, so back in the 50s, you know, that's you had true. To put it in context, right? Mm-hmm. 40s, 50s, 60s, a lot of things you couldn't say.
Yeah.
You couldn't say curse words on television, right? Mm-hmm. And you couldn't say, but now when we're in an era, like it or not, mm-hmm. where there's much more freedom mm-hmm. to say and being provocative is everybody's shtick now, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. I just don't think sometimes it's as, you know,
right.
shocking
yeah.
or different as we would have thought some years ago.
Yep. How have the landscape changed? The musical landscape changed. You talked about it a little bit in regards to, you know, how things were in the 40s and 50s and 60s and whatnot. But in regard to, you know, what music sounded like whenever you first started versus, you know, what it's like now. I mean, you talked a little bit about how you appreciate or don't appreciate some of the music that's out now.
Yeah.
But yeah, talk to me a little bit about how your perception yeah. has changed and the messaging has changed.
Well, I'll go first and then I'd love to hear Ed's take on this. I like quality music, regardless of the genre. Mm-hmm. And by quality, I mean, it doesn't mean that it expresses a level of proficiency for your instrument, whether your instrument is a voice or, and not to say it has to be a certain type, right? Mm-hmm. As you said, I have a fairly high bar because I grew up listening to bands. And in fact, we were at an event in Atlanta 2 weeks ago. It was a killer band and we danced the night away. You know, they were doing old school, but it was really good music. I have no issue with integrating and incorporating some manipulation and technology, but that shouldn't take the place for the talent.
Right.
So for my ear and my musical taste, I think that there's still some really good artists, you know, making great stuff today. I'm happy to see artists who were really at the top of their game in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, some of them who were still going, you know, who were still going strong, whether they're jazz or pop or blues, as long as you still can produce a good quality of music. You know, the old adage, particularly with blues musicians and jazz musicians, they don't retire, they just down the bandstand. Mm-hmm. You know, that, you know, if they're still active and good. But I think the bar for what professional means, I think, has slipped. You know, I just think it has, whether you're talking about soul or whatever, you know, or pop or blues or jazz. I think the bar has been lowered in terms of who can call themselves a professional. And that's been an issue, I think, for jazz for a while because, you know, because jazz is such a broad spectrum of music and we hear it a lot and it's so many different forms within, under that umbrella. You know, somebody who is fairly mediocre can step out and say, oh, I'm a professional player and, you know.
She's so wonderful. I every once in a while I have to say, that's a good one, Polly, you know, Pollyanna. I think we said this in an earlier conversation, but she has a saying that, We're listening to someone and we're not too pleased with what we're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And we wonder why it's popular or considered to be good music.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll say, well, I'm happy for their success. You know, and my response is, no, I'm not happy for their success. I mean, there should be a higher barrier, a higher mm-hmm. bar to being successful and being popular and all these. And I get it and I understand that. You know, I mean, jazz was the popular music at one time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then it became not so much. And things change. But I'm along with her. I do like to see good musicianship mm-hmm. when I'm listening to or going to a concert or something like that. That impresses me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that we share. Is that when we go to see a performance, I mean, we are just love to see good people playing. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make a difference what the genre of music is. We just appreciate that you're actually good at what you do, you know, and it isn't a shtick. It isn't, you know, the entertainment factor where you're on stage with a bunch of dancers and all the other stuff. I mean, it's fine.
But if you think about it in terms of other professions, I mean, you guys are professionals. Mm-hmm. You know, you studied your craft. You do this all the time. You know, there is a bar for what's considered professional. And what other people choose to either buy or listen to, it's up to them. Yeah. But for me, I just think if you are choosing to be a professional anything, then there should be some bar there.
Yeah. Is there a lack of griot mentality in today's musical landscape, would you say?
No, I think there's an appreciation for it.
Okay.
Whether it's rap or whether it's, you know, whether you're talking about, you know, hip hop, I think that there are a number of artists who are, you know, are doing that now in different kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, in different kinds of ways. I think there's an appreciation for it in terms of how they convey stories, as well as sort of the stories they tell. And you know, he's gonna smile when I say this. But even artists, for example, like Common.
Yeah.
And when you think about, I saw him when he came to NCCU when I was working there a few years ago. There was something about, it wasn't just the concert. It was about the seriousness with which he took his platform, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. He was using his musical platform and his notoriety to convey, and you could tell he was thoughtful, you know, about that. Am I as much attuned to or in touch with a lot of artists like I used to be? I haven't been, particularly over the course of the pandemic. And because there's so many places now, my son and I talk about this a lot. You know, back in the day when you sort of knew where to go to listen, mm-hmm, the good news is that there's so many places you can find music now. But the bad news is that, and most of them are subscription services now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. I think we chuckled about, even in terms of doing this new project that I'm doing, yeah, I'm going to print some actual CDs because people like to have them as artifacts. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But as you know now, you know, it has to be either through XM or Sirius or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's, I find it, and would love to ask you to, you know, how are you finding music you're listening to? And I know it's a combination of old and new. When we were hosting our radio show for 4 years, we made sure we kept up to date on who the new latest jazz musicians were, you know. But in the last 4 or 5 years especially, the landscape has completely changed. So I'd love to hear about what are you listening to, and how are you discovering new music?
You go first, Chris. Sure. I'm loaded. I'm ready. Go ahead.
All right. Well, it's funny because I had the same experience as you. Like, my favorite day of the week used to be Tuesday, because that was when they'd release new records. So I'd go to the record store, and I was even before they had You Could Listen. So I remember buying albums, either I thought maybe I read something about the band, or I'm like, this looks cool. It's like, didn't even hear it. And I found some fantastic music that way. Also found some pretty lousy music that way. I've gone back and forth. Like, to me, it's a bit of a godsend. I mean, I hate the fact that artists make so little off of their streaming, but I've been looking for a service that truly recognizes the breadth of what I listen to and suggests stuff that I would otherwise not know about. Otherwise, I just use the services to find bands that I haven't thought about in 10 or 15 years and hope that they're on there. But so I switched recently to Spotify and away from YouTube Music, and I'm still not quite finding exactly, but it's great to be able to listen to whatever you want. But it's sort of has taken away that, I'm going to tell one more story about my family, sorry. It's taken away sort of that event nature of either a new record being released, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, or something. It's like when I go to my grandparents' house when I was a kid, to this day, I'm sure we did other stuff, but I remember everything would stop. It was always on Sundays at 6 or 7 o'clock because Hee Haw was on. My grandparents were huge. Yep. Everything stopped and we watched Hee Haw, and you'd always see somebody pretty big perform live. Mm-hmm. And that's what I remember. I paid more attention to the corny jokes that they did. Right. But so you sort of lost that because it can always be there. Like it can just be in the background. And not that you couldn't do that with CDs before, but it just seems like a commodity now, much more than I don't know. I like that I can listen to whatever I want to, which is cool, but I miss something about that finding an artist on your own in sort of a weird way, whether it be with your future spouse or on your own.
I mean, but before Brandon speaks, let's just say I knew I liked you for a reason. So we were huge Hee Haw fans, and we're all over the map. We watch Hee Haw, we watch Lawrence Welk, we watch Jackie Gleason, we watch all those shows. Yeah. And, of course, Hee Haw, the fact that when people like Charlie Pride, would come on along with all the other things, that discovery was special. It was really special.
It really was, absolutely.
For me, I call it a fruit salad approach. I'm with you in regard to, I subscribe to iTunes and I submit to the algorithm, my listening preferences, and it spits stuff back out to me, things that it suggests and whatnot. And that's how I find some of my new artists. So that's part of the fruit salad. But then the other, part is, pretty much, word of mouth. A different set of algorithms give me suggestions through word of mouth. Case in point, like TikTok. Like you'll find, and this is hit or miss, so don't judge me too much for this. But you can find artists that are connected to particular interests that you might have. Given sometimes you do find, entertainers as opposed to actual musicians. But every so often, somebody will pop up out the ether and they will connect because of their musicianship. You can see their talent, because they're either performing live or, you'll see a bunch of people take that song and remix it and whatnot. And then you get a feel for the musician, which also brings me to my next point, artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. One of the big things that's going on right now is this concern about artificial intelligence replacing musicians, or taking, for instance, your voice. And, even after you've sung your last song, now we can remix.
Right.
We have Lois with Biggie on a track.
Biggie.
Exactly.
Wanna do us, screw us, who us? Yeah, Papa and Pop, close like Starsky and Hutch.
So we have that, but and there's a lot of concern about it. But I feel what I just mentioned in regard to that human connection, connecting with people through the algorithm, connecting with people who have connected with your music, that actually offsets the artificial. Because you're not going to be able to find a machine that's going to have the narratives or the storytelling acumen that you do.
And I have one more. Sorry, the human nature. The other thing that I've done, continue to do is. This seems really dorky, but my buddy from college, we continue to make playlists to this day. And so I actually do with my kids, so I can plug some of their stuff into the algorithm. So that's another human element of it. That's where I've actually found most of my music is through stuff that other people listen to.
Well, thank you for mentioning that, Brandon, too, because around the AI, what's happening now and in the future, we're two or three things on that front. It's a bit of a sticky wicket paradox or whatever, because you're right, there's an opportunity for more people to know you exist because of all these things. For most of my friends who are professional musicians, most of them make their money on the road anyway. That's where they make their paychecks, right? And that's why the pandemic was so devastating. So it really could be that, and Prince, rest his soul, sort of did that before he passed away. Let's just put the music out there for free because I'm going to make my money touring, right? So it's that balance. But for me, it's how do you strike the right balance? Because even if you are infusing AI to imitate my sound, AI, at least at this point, you can holograph me onto the stage if you want to, but that's not terrifying mm-hmm. for most people who are real fans who want to pay good money to come see you, whether you're a rock star or a jazz musician. So I think that that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in the future. It is, though, for me, a slap in the face to artists, period. And I know that music isn't the only place where this is happening, is that people's intellectual property, hard work, talent that they have spent a lifetime developing is not rewarded or compensated and literally, in some cases, stolen mm-hmm. because there is no good model for how you can, you know, how you can be compensated for it. It's mm-hmm. not new. I mean, you know, it's new in how it's being done, but we think back again, you know, back some of the Motown stars and others who weren't duly compensated for their mm-hmm. work. So it's a different take on taking advantage of workers and art, creative workers in many ways. But yeah, there's a lot of opportunity. There's also a lot of abuse. Mm-hmm. But how do you achieve that balance in a way that makes it viable and sustainable for people who are trying to make their lives? So I'm not afraid of the artificial intelligence piece because I just think at some point, think about it. You know, for some time, I've been listening to electronic music. I remember many years ago when my son was young, he was into electronica and techno and mm-hmm. you know all this stuff. So it's a different take on it, and who knows where it's going to go. So I'm not as concerned about AI as I am just finding a fair a way for musicians and creatives to be compensated yeah. for their work and their talent.
To get ahead of that, do you envision a need for some kind of mentorship to make, you know, I guess like younger artists or artists who are unfamiliar with this technology, you know, more are building some kind of coalition of unity or support behind, you know, yeah. art? Artists who, you know, want to make sure that doesn't happen to them?
I think some of that's probably happening already. And I think about not so much, this is exactly the same thing, but I think about my friend Lenora, who heads the interim chair of music at NCCU. For some time now, they have been teaching a class on the business of music mm-hmm. as part of the curriculum, which was something that was absent because we all know people who said, oh, I'm a great artist, but I gotta, you know, make my living some other way because I don't know how to make a living as an artist. So I think hopefully the next step really will be to be more aware of here are some of the barriers, here are things that you have to be concerned about. In the same way that they're teaching how to integrate and use technology as a musician, everything from, for example, my little studio set up at home now. 20 years ago, 15 years ago, it would be unheard of that I could afford high-quality equipment. I have friends who they can pretty much produce their final recordings in their homes. Mm-hmm. It's that affordable now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't want to seem like technology and, you know, is the enemy because it's not. I mean, I just think innovation is always going to happen, and that's part of being creative, is the innovative part. It's finding that sweet spot and that balance. But to your point, making people aware, this is something you need to at least know about. You know, if you are seeking to be a professional, be aware and how do you, you know, I'd be interested if it has
I agree with you. I was just going to make a comment that I think is kind of funny. You don't want to be in a situation like I was at the Blues Festival where you have an artist who didn't quite understand how they were supposed to be managing their money. Mm-hmm. And so when that artist had completed their show, they were hoping to get paid, but as it turns out, the sheriff was there with a warrant to say, this person owes this money, so that whatever you were planning to hand off to this artist, you're handing it to us.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's another thing, too, and we didn't talk about it earlier in terms of our, I used to always love going to the Bull Durham Blues Festival here in Durham. The Hayti sponsored it for years and years, and Ed Volland did a lot of the. I was on the board at the time, and you did.
Yeah, I was on the board and the chairman of the committee.
Of the committee, and seeing and being with legends. I mean, I saw John Lee Hooker and Buddy Guy and Coco Taylor, and I mean, these are, you know. Yeah.
Spell W O M
Current project. Mm-hmm. We were talking a little bit about, you know, the pandemic and what came out of the pandemic. Do you want to fill us in on what you got, what gestated in that chaos and what you birthed?
what a visual there, Brandon. I don't know about that.
I got alliteration, you know, is my thing. Go
let's,
ahead.
Let's just say projects with an S on the end, because gotcha. Like most, you know, folks, most creatives and just most ordinary people, there are always things swirling around in my head, and some of them come to fruition and some don't. But I think I really have crystallized around this new work. And it's been a long time in the making. Some of the songs were nuggets of things that had been there before. But during the pandemic, especially some of the tunes that you heard when you did the video for me, were things that really were born and conceived out of loss from the pandemic. But not just the loss. It was out of just having time to be clear and think about some things, and we all need time to step away, you know, mm-hmm. to think. And I thought that I had a timeline to get it released and all that. And last fall, you know, like all families, you know, my dad passed away in December. Mm-hmm. And so the fall was a time that we just needed to be with family and some other things. And to be honest with you, I just haven't completely regrouped. I mean, I'm doing great, you know, I'm doing fine. But having that lag in time, now I'm just trying to think about what I want to put out. Will it be an EP or will it be an actual full project? You know, I probably have 15 pieces from which I need to narrow down to maybe 7 or 8 pieces. The concert that I did in July, I think I did 10 pieces that night. Mm-hmm. They were very well received. I got some really good feedback from that. So I just need to make a decision. And it's not unusual, whether you are a novelist or a painter or a photographer, you know, letting go is a challenge. But I'm determined to get it done within the next 6 months or so and get it out, and I'm looking forward to it. But as a group, as a work, for lack of a better word right now, it has a couple of working titles, and mm-hmm. one working title is the name of one of the tunes, which is called Nothing Stands Alone. Mm-hmm. And that one was written for the grandchildren for a specific reason. You know, we have a very big, diverse family. Mm-hmm. Our grandchildren are mixed-race children, mm-hmm. And even if they were not, there are things I want to impart to them. And the first lyrics of that song, it goes, you know, you were born of love, conceived as a beautiful gift to the world. And so it really is about, and that's linked to another tune, one of the tunes that you heard that was written for my father's grandmother. So it's a body of work that I think anybody can identify with, because it's universal in terms of the themes. Personal for me, but universal in terms of themes.
So I just wanted to add to that, because I think as you were going through the exercise of putting all of these things together and writing and sharing with me to see, well, what do you think about this and how does this sound? And then you did that concert. Mm-hmm. I also think that things that happened during the pandemic, mm-hmm. If you want to think about things that were positive things that could have come out of that, mm-hmm. Is that people were, in some cases, isolated or... and people who are artistic, when they're busy with their regular lives and all the other things that go on, sometimes there's too much distraction mm-hmm. to spend time on mm-hmm. your craft mm-hmm. or on your work. And focus. I think this was where she made the best of a not great situation mm-hmm. and came up with some really wonderful music. And so I think, you know, and other people who have done the same. I mean, I think about some of the stuff that you did with the art around Diversify and all that stuff. I mean, some of those ideas, mm-hmm. we talk about things that were gestating mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and then you know, happened, right? And then birth, right? You know, right. I mean, you know, the artistic thing that you did with Diversify IT at the Powerhouse and some of the other things that are being done. A lot of that stuff happened through ideas that were sort of percolating, mm-hmm. but then maybe there was more time and energy because you weren't quite as distracted with what the rest of the world had to offer, mm-hmm. because you just couldn't get out there and do those things. And so I don't know if that was helpful or whether it wasn't, but I think for some people, and especially for artists, I think some of this was kind of helpful for them.
So mm-hmm. I also have to say to my husband, part of it too, we do pretty well as a couple because we're good at being together and we're good at being apart. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. so during the pandemic, we kept our regular schedule. We got up, we did our usual routine. He went in his space to work. I went in my space to work. And then particularly like on the weekends, we weren't going out and doing things as much. So, you know, he wasn't golfing or whatever, but, you know, I would go in and I would, you know, I'd go in and close the door. I'd start working on, you know, playing around, playing piano, writing or whatever. So in a way, it was a way to also help him preserve his sanity because I had something to work on that did not require, you know.
Well, to be fair, I mean, golf was one of the few things you could do during that. Yeah, and so I was out of the house for four or 5 hours where she can sit in there and she didn't have to worry about whether she was disturbing me or not.
But the other funny real quickly, and I know we have to wrap up, is that we have this little upright piano in our living room mm-hmm. that I keep threatening to get rid of, but I love it. He convinced me to buy a new electric, and I wanted a new electric because at night I love working at night, mm-hmm. and you don't want to, you know.
You can plug your headphones in.
Plug my headphones mm-hmm. in. But when I'm writing, I prefer that there's something about even though I have a weighted keyboard on the other one.
And feeling it.
It's something about feeling the vibration from that piano when I'm writing. And lately, it seems like every time he walks in the door from work.
She's singing at the piano.
I say, hey, honey.
Yeah. Which is great. I mean, you know, I think it's wonderful that she has the opportunity to do that. And again, that's, you know, this is one of the things that, you know, we talk about getting together and what makes us work, and you know, that's her creative outlet, and I think it's great that she's able to do that, and I'm 100% supportive and all that, you know, but you have it recorded that mm-hmm. there's something coming out in it's about 6 months, so I want to be able to.
We're gonna hold it.
Okay, good.
I got your back, Ed. Yeah. So, being her number one in-house fan, Ed, where would you like to see Lois go in regard to her artistry?
Away.
No. I mean, I just want to see her do what she feels like she wants to do. Mm-hmm. And so I know that, I mean, I love to see her perform. I know that other people love to see her perform. Mm-hmm. And so I think if there's an opportunity for her to continue to do that, I think that's wonderful and fabulous. I want to see her get this this collection of music put together, because I know that what's going to come along with that are gigs, because mm-hmm. you want to then present that work. And so she'll get to do what she likes to do, which is the writing and which is the all of that. But then she gets to do what other people like to see, which is the performance. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I just want to see her take that next logical step, you know, and I'm just going to be there to help her to do it and be part of it as much as I can be.
Where are you trying to go, Lois?
I was just laughing because this concludes the podcast of the stuck artist. I agree with him. I've been a little bit reluctant because it's not even fear of success. Mm-hmm. But it is part of being a public, having a public persona. Mm. It's one thing, you know, again, if my friends who are photographers and, you know, you stand back from the work and certainly you interact with people. It's the music for me is very personal. And I say to my friends who do it all the time, every time I step off of a stage after a concert, I really wonder how they do it night after night, because it really when you really put your heart and soul in it, it takes a little time to recover. And I don't want to I don't want this to come off sounding some kind of way, but that's how it feels for me. It doesn't feel quite as weighty as when the old lady said, I want you to sing mm-hmm. at my funeral. But because I'm so connected to the music, mm-hmm. Particularly sometimes the live, and I love it. I love it, and I am honored and just feel so humble when people come out to see me sing. I really am. You know, it's a gift. I mean, it really is a gift for me that they are there. But I am one of those people where I don't know how artists do it night after night. So I have to put some space in between. But I do want to start doing it, you know, presenting the music more regularly, because I think that's the context in which it should be given. I'm looking forward to the recording, but it really is the live concerts that really personifies what I'm trying to get at. Hmm.
As a storyteller, you know, it's important to be vulnerable, to make yourself vulnerable. You've made yourself vulnerable here today. Both of you have, in regard to giving us some insight into your relationship and how music connects with both of you. So I personally want to thank both of y'all for being here and being part of this podcast, this experience with Chris and I.
Oh, well, mm-hmm. thank you. And I'm just looking forward to hearing the upcoming, podcast as well. And I appreciate Ed, you know, agreeing to do this with me. I mean, it's one thing to have to put up with my piano playing at home, but to, you know.
Well, I get to be the husband in tow fairly often, so that works for me.
I've always liked it, but now I like him more.
So. Like, you know, she talks about doing the radio show, and we did the radio show because she's the public persona. Mm. And so, you know, they asked her, Lois, wouldn't you love to, you know, host the radio show on WNCU? We've got a Sunday slot. It would be great. And she's like, yeah, I'll do that if my husband will do it. Now, she didn't ask me. She just said, I'd love to do it if my husband will do it with me. And so, by extension, I get to go along with the program. Yeah. So
any preview of what else you have coming up for the season?
Right now, for the rest of the season, we have a couple other artists who aren't vocal artists, but we have some artists who we have one who's a violinist. Violinist, that's right. So we're going to bring her in to talk about her appreciation of classical music and performance art in that way. And then there are two other artists that we're fielding out right now, but I'll keep you in the loop. But basically, we're going to continue to explore this relationship individuals have with music and how it, you know, enhances it.
So, I know that I've said this to the two of you before, but I really appreciate what you all have done. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is fantastic what you all are doing. And when we were prepping for the idea of coming onto this, we sat in the kitchen. We listened to all the episodes.
Yeah, really good.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah. It was great. You know, she was duly impressed.
I'm like,
so you know, yeah. Okay. He's like, these guys are serious. This is professional. Yeah,
right. We're trying to make an impact.
That's
We're trying to change lives. Yeah. Well, thank you for changing ours today so much, and thank you for giving your time. We'll let you guys get back to their busy schedules.
Yeah. That's true.
But we'll keep you in the loop. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks
very
again.
Much.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
The audacity of this pitch.
The conversation does not have to stop here. Join us on diversifyit.duke.edu and join our listserv.